The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at
We're going to cause trouble.
Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. All right, Farrell on the bench with Mafia, hour two, rocking it from New York City. So I just wanted to say it was, and it still is, freezing ass here. I mean, unbelievable, Mafia. You have to admit. I mean, it just sucks here so bad. Like, I can't even get over it. Like, a week ago, it was 72 degrees, right? And now, right now, it's 20 degrees outside. It's freezing ass. And it rained like for 2 days, and then all of a sudden it cleared up today at noon for the Yankee home opener. But it was sunny, but it was freezing ass at Yankee Stadium because it was 40 degrees and there was a driving wind that was bone chilling, and it just is awful. If you go outside right now, it is freezing cold, rainy, and wind whipping. It is so awful, and it's going to be frozen ass overnight, right? Like just terrible. Like people. They're saying, bring in your plants, all the rest, because everybody thinks it's spring here, but it's not. It just is never spring. It's effing winter. It's still winter on April 1st. It is unavoidable how bad it sucks here. You can't even deny it. Who wants to go to Yankee Stadium, 40 degrees and bone rattling wind cutting right through you like a knife? Who needs it? It sucks here so bad. But I have to say that the Pirates, my Buccos, opened at Wrigley and kicked the Cubs right in the throat. 5-3 with those Buccos. I got my Pirates hoodie on right now. I pimped this out today on the opening day special with Joe Ranieri on Sports Grid. I was on today from 2 to 4 for opening day. It was pretty cool. We did a great show and covered all the games. And the Pirates had a big day, and everybody's talking about Ke'Bryan Hayes, big bomb in the first inning, a 410-foot monster shot to left into the seats at Wrigley, and the Buccos win it 5-3. Howard the winner, Kendricks the loser, Rodriguez the save, and your boy, the Todd Father, even got in on it. He had a double to left center, RBI. He also had a single to shallow left. And Polanco scored. Your boy, the Todd Father, Mafia. That's your friend from the Mets, now a Pirate. And he didn't even make the team. Remember, they out of spring training in Bradenton, they cut him. And they said, you're not making the team. And they said, no deal, you're out. And then they brought him back on like a minor league contract or something. The worst contract he's ever had in his life. But now he's playing for the Pirates. Starts and then ends up raking a couple RBIs for him today at Wrigley. I mean, it makes no sense to me whatsoever to not have that guy on their team. They suck so bad. And, you know, he's old and washed. and he doesn't really do anything anymore regularly. He's not consistent. He's not like some kind of badass, but he can, he's very capable of getting RBIs and driving in runs like he did today. I know you liked the Todd Father when he played for the Mets, Moss.
Yeah, Todd Father, you know, Frazier's been everywhere. I mean, he played for both New York teams. He's played all over the league throughout his career. The guy's been everywhere, but he's, you know, still a guy that, he's not the guy that's going to rip it up. He's not the guy that's going to be, you know, he probably shouldn't be your everyday guy, but he still gets his production here or there. He's, you know, good for a spot start. He's good to, you know, come in for a week or two to spell a guy who's on the DL. It's good to give a guy a rest. I mean, but hey, maybe in Pittsburgh he might actually get some more time. You never know with some of these young guys, especially if they start having one guy that shows some signs, they're going to ship him out, right? Anybody that's good, they're going to ship out. So he might get some good playing time at a bunch of different positions this year.
I hope so. And it was just great to see him win a game because, you know, I'm a big Pirate fan and so is my son. And I brainwashed him and he realized, and he hates, my son absolutely loathes the Yankees. He hates them dead. And I like them, right? And so I like the Yankees and the Pirates. And he hates them. So he just was so happy that the Yankees lost to the Jays and that the Pirates beat the Cubs. It, like, made his day. We welcome our radio affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 204, Mightier 1090 in San Diego near Tijuana. Do you wanna? And then Sports Map Radio and Sports Byline USA, Armed Forces Radio, all over the world. Hoorah, soldier, hoorah. It's Pharrell on the Bench with Mafia on a, what is it, Thursday? I think it's a Thursday night. I don't even know.
It is, yes.
Thank you. White Sox lead the Angels 1-0 in the fourth inning in Anaheim, where today on Coast to Coast and on the opening day special, everyone predicted that Mike Trout would win the MVP and also drive in the most runs. And I predicted that the Angels would suck like they always do. And they're off to a nice start. 1-0, they're down, but that's not that bad. They could still win that game. Astros lead the A's at the Ashtray right now. In Alameda, 1-0 Astros, top of the fourth, runner at second. The Giants lead the Mariners in Seattle in the fourth, 3-0. And those are the games ongoing. When we get back, I'll talk about all the games that are finals, including the Jays beating the Yankees and the Dodgers losing to the lowly Rockies. You heard me, in Coors Field. That was embarrassing. Padres were up big, then lost the lead, and then won the game by a run. You get it all on the Bench.
Your search is over.
You found it.
What you've been looking for.
The definitive culmination of the state of the art of sports talk.
This
is The Winning Edge. You're listening to the Sports Grid Radio Network.
All right, Pharrell on a Bench, toll free 844-843-6879. So the Blue Jays came back, tied it up at the Bronx, and beat the Yankees in 10, 3-2. I know that some people don't like that broke-ass rule, start with a runner at second base in extra innings, but that's what happened there. And they got a guy on, Davis, got him home on a shot off the wall and right over Judge's head. I thought, you know, Judge had a single in the game, whatever, but I thought overall Judge was terrible. And Stanton was worse. Hicks was even worse than him. He was 0-for donuts. I think that Sanchez had a great game with the home run, the single, and the throwout. I thought he played great for a guy that's certainly much maligned. I thought he played great. And but the Jays got it done. And, you know, I thought in the middle of the game, you know, the Yankees had the lead, la-di-da, but then Hernandez hit the just massive shot, 437 feet to left to tie the game in the sixth inning. And then Grichuk doubled to deep right. That scored Davis in the 10th. That was the winning hit. and they got it done. Romano, the winner. Nelson, the loser. Merriweather, Floyd Mayweather's next door neighbor. I'm just kidding. Had the save. But, you know, it was tough. Biggio was 0 for 5. Bichette 0 for 4. Hernandez was 3 for 4, so he was the star. Guerrero 1 for 2. Couple of walks. Gurriel had a hit. Grychek went 2 for 4. An RBI. He was, you know, the game-winning hit. So the Yankees had so many chances to win that game. Judge had the bases loaded or whatever in the ninth, and he was I think it was a 2-0 count, something like that. I don't know. I thought the third pitch was a, you know, just a meatball right over the plate, fastball, you know, like 94, 95 miles an hour, right down the middle. And I mean, it was just a meatball. Like, it was literally at the catcher's head, and he just let it go in for a strike. I couldn't believe he didn't swing at it. I don't think anybody could. And then, I mean, that was it. Nobody did jack. I think Torres struck out to end the game. I could be wrong. It was awful. I mean, I just saw one after the next. Stanton struck out so many times I lost track. Hicks, he sucks so bad. I can't even fathom they gave that dude $80 million. I mean, I just want to hurl every time I see the guy. Mafia, how many years now have I been abusing Aaron Hicks? Like, look, he's a switch hitter, whatever. He can't hit. He can field. I'll give him that. He's decent. He's got speed. He can make plays out in center field or whatever. But how many years have you listened to me talk about his decline after they gave him all that money?
I'd say the last 2 to 3.
Thank you. He got the money like a couple years ago, and I've been just doing him since because he's never done a thing. You know he hasn't. Last year, they're paying this guy all this money. He had 21 RBIs. People say, oh, well, it was only 60 games. Whatever. That still sucks. I mean, honestly. I mean, these guys hit 225, and I'm supposed to, like, carry their luggage? Are you kidding me? I said that today on TV, and I don't care what anybody thinks when I say, when I grew up, just live it, all right? Like, I watched George Brett, Carew, Yount. I watched all these guys. I mean, can you imagine Pete Rose hitting 210 and getting paid $100 million? I mean, honestly, none of these guys can hit. And I watched, like, I mean, even way before you, Mafia, I watched the best players ever. I guess I just lived even. I watched Kirby Puckett rake. I watched them all. You name it, I've seen it. I saw the Big Red Machine. I've seen everything. I mean, for 55 years, I've seen everything. I really have. And now they pay these guys. I mean, I get it. Time moves on, and they make more money now. Fabulous. Thanks so much for reminding me of that. But the reality is that, you know, they don't deserve it. It's just absolute BS that they make the money that they make when they suck as bad as they do. Honestly, all they do is strike out or hit a home run. And most of the time it's strike out, and very seldom is it a home run. I mean, Mafia, you can't even argue it. You can't even argue that there's, I mean, what, 75% of the league sucks? Like, it completely sucks. They can't hit. And then 25% maybe at best. I'm almost willing to go 10%. That 10% of the league's good. Like, that are really good players, like star players that can flat out play. Guys that keep breaking and making all this money. You know, Machado, Tatis, all these guys, Trout. Now you got Lindor making the money. Pitchers making that kind of money. Most of the pitchers that make the big money have, you know, the goods and the numbers to get the money, right? You know, you got the, if you pitch like these guys now, like Snell, and you pitch like Coles, and they're very rare, these guys, DeGrom. Let's face it, Mafia, anyone that can pitch that's really good, the best pitchers are going to make fat money, just sickening amounts of money. If you can pitch flat out, like they just gave Bauer, right? Bieber, they're all going to get the money Clevenger, all of them. Paddock, all of them. Every guy. And, you know, it is amazing. Now Snell's in San Diego. Think of it. The best players all rake. The best players rake. But the point is, everybody else rakes too, and they can't even get a hit. All they do is go out. They hit 190, and then I'm supposed to like. I mean, it's unbelievable. You can't even argue it, Mafia.
I don't argue it. I agree with it. I mean, even when I was a kid, you know, 20 years ago, watching the game, if you were a guy that hit 240, you weren't making the show. You were down to the minors. Now it doesn't matter. You can hit 210. You can hit 225 as long as you hit the ball out on the time that you do connect. It's all about slugging percentage. It's all about the big shot now, you know, the big hits. It's not about getting hits. It's not about getting on base. It's just about cracking the ball over the fence. It's ridiculous to me that, you know, it used to be you couldn't be an all-star unless you're at least hitting 285, 290. Now you got guys hitting 250 that are, you know, MVPs and getting $30 million a year just because they hit 30 home runs. It's ridiculous.
Honestly, if I watch a guy, because, you know, they used to say if they get three hits in 10, it's like a big deal. I'm like, what? I don't even want to hear it. Bottom line is, I watch guys now. It seems like to me more like they get one or two hits out of 10. That's it. They get one hit every 10 at bats. And then I'm like, don't even tell me I'm wrong. I'm watching it. And you can take your analytics and stick it in your ear. All I know is that's great. You're all a bunch of geniuses, MIT, everything else. Have at it with your math. Congratulations. That's fabulous. I watch a game. You go 1 for 10. You suck. Okay. That's what that is. You know what that algebra is? 1 for 10. You suck. That's what that is. Kids, today we're going to do algebra with Pharrell. Brian, I'll take your question in 1 second, son. And remember, there's no bringing pizza to class. If you go 1 for 10, class, you suck. Class is dismissed. Now bring me an apple. Shake out. Ooh, what'd you want to say, Moff?
You were saying the thing about the pitchers, too, and I agree. You know, I was looking at, you know, these lineups and these rosters. I'm trying to pick who's going to win these divisions and things like that. And I just look at some of these rosters, and it's like, did the GMs look and say, oh, okay, it's okay, we don't need to pitch. We're just going to throw batting practice. The guys on these pitching staffs suck, and they didn't make any moves to fix them.
They do. And here's another thing. I went on the air with Joe Ranieri today. And I said, you talk about them, because I've never heard any of these bums, because they all suck.
My buddy's a fan of yours in Vancouver, Canada, so he hears you crystal clear. I thought I'd let you know that.
Time after time, I sit and I wait for your call.
All right, Pharrell on a bench with Mafia, and Aaron Torres is hooking up with us from Lipstick City from Fox Sports and the Aaron Torres podcast. He's been on the bench 5 million times. He's awesome. We thought we'd talk some college rack with him. Before we get into the Final Four, I want to start with these two jobs, one that's open in Chapel Hill and then one that just closed, which was not Beard, which I, you know, we already know he's going to win it, Austin. And then everybody in Lubbock's going to hate his guts. Let's talk about Mike Woodson, because Mike Woodson's a 76 to 80 Hoosier, so he was on the national championship team. And Knight loved him. And then everyone that ever went to IU or that watches IU or knows anything about IU knows about Mike Woodson. And then he got 25 years coaching in the NBA. Some people ask me, do you think he'll do well at Indiana? And I'm like, you know, I would think that parents and kids would be enamored with playing for a guy that did 25 years in the NBA and that also won a national championship at Indiana and was a Knight disciple who's basically Jesus Christ. down in Bloomington, Indiana. So I think they're going to like Mike Woodson, and I think they'll be disciplined. And I think eventually at some point or another, he'll win there.
That sounds an awful lot like a prominent Indiana alum trying to sell himself on this hire. Call me crazy, Scotty, but no, man. You know, what I'll say is, look, you know, it shouldn't have been the first call. I think that I was a little frustrated in knowing that there were still some good coaches in the NCAA tournament that you could have waited on. But what I'll also say is a couple things. I mean, I think, first of all, retaining Kenya Hunter, the lead assistant who recruited basically the entire team, or at least part of the team, I think is a huge deal. And I do think if Mike Woodson can convince the players that are in the transfer portal to come back, listen, this Indiana team was in position to make the NCAA tournament with about two and a half weeks left in the season. It is not an untalented team. It does need a little tweaking. It does need a little adjusting. It does need maybe a guy or two in the transfer portal themselves. But they're not that far off from being like a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team potentially rising up. And so, you know, when I look at it, I think the talent is there. I think retaining the assistant coaches was a smart decision from his part. And I think, right, let's be honest, what is success for Mike Woodson in the first year or two? It's making a freaking NCAA tournament, which shouldn't be that hard. And so I'll be honest, I wasn't super crazy about the hire when it happened. I still don't think, you know, this is, you know, Bobby Knight 2.0. But I also think on the flip side, what is, you know, what is success in the first two, three, 4 years? And if it's two NCAA tournaments in 4 years and you know, a Sweet 16 run in one of them, guess what? That's a major upgrade over what's happened the last five, six, 7 years. So, you know, I think two things can be true. I don't think it would have been my first choice, but I also think it could work better than people, myself included, are giving it credit for.
Yeah, I don't think it was a first choice, but I think that, believe it or not, I think there's more Knight in him than he'll ever admit. Everyone that ever played for him, I think, is influenced in the same capacity as Walton was to Wooden. You have to understand, there's never been one guy that played for him that didn't say it, that like he runs through their veins, what he taught them and how he led them and how he drove them nuts and screamed and yelled at them and cussed them out and coached them and treated them like crap. But they loved him. 95% of them loved him. And they'll always say the same things about him, that they're, you know, that the things that they teach him, Wooden, Knight, these guys, Krzyzewski, that it's ingrained in them. And I bet it's like having a virus, no pun intended with what's going on with COVID, but having a virus in Bloomington is a Bob Knight virus. So like when Woodson goes down there, even though he coached in the NBA for 25 years, he's going to end up being like Knight in the sense of the discipline. And in, I believe, the defense and the motion offense that Knight taught him, I think he's bringing back there, whether he likes it or not. I really do. I think he'll say, I'm going to be my own man and all this other stuff. But I think he's already like a little, I do think he and many others that played for him would bring out some of that in some capacity in the gig.
Well, what I'll say is, you know, no one, listen, I'll say this, man. No one questions the X's and O's. I mean, you know, all these guys that come down from the NBA know basketball. I mean, you don't get to be the Indiana head coach after you're the Knicks head coach. I mean, you talk about, and I know you and I are from a different era. I mean, you talk about the best jobs in basketball. You know, Indiana basketball and the Knicks head coach are like on the short list of like the top five across the sport of basketball. And so I only bring it up because, you know, the X's and O's aren't the concern to me. The concern to me is always going to be the recruiting aspect. You know, it's just a different deal, man. And, you know, like now more than ever with this transfer portal stuff, it's crazy. But what I would also say is a couple things is that, you know, recruiting really does build on itself. And I do think a couple things. One, you hire a few assistants that really want to grind, and you become kind of the public face of this thing. And then two, again, it's all about winning. If you have success this year one, if you get all these guys out of the transfer portal and back to Indiana, and you go to the second round of the NCAA tournament in year one, you are on fire in year two. Scotty, I've told this story a million times, and I'll tell you a little insight. I remember two summers ago, talking to, you know, go to an AAU event and just kind of talking to the players there and, you know, hey, you know, who's recruiting you, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And one player, and when I tell you the name, you're going to laugh, but, you know, he starts listing off all the schools. Yeah, this school just offered me and that school just offered me. Texas Tech just offered me. Well, Texas Tech wasn't on anyone's radar 4 years ago, and then Chris Beard gets there, he takes them to a Final Four, and they're like the hot program. You know who told me that, Scotty? You know what player told me that? A young point guard by the name of Christian Lander. And for people who don't know, he was the one that ended up in Indiana. I still think he's going to be a really good college player and, you know, potentially play in the NBA. But what I'm telling you is these 18, 19-year-old kids, it's all about this moment in time. What have you done for me this second? And so if he gets all those guys back and has success in year one, it's going to snowball in recruiting in 2022, 2023, and beyond. And there really is a chance that he could actually have some legitimate success.
Fair enough. Aaron Torres with his Fox Sports. I have to say this. I was disappointed in him based on they like have three Mr. Basketballs on that team in that program right now before they all jumped on that portal. But they had three guys that were Mr. Basketball and they still suck. And that's just amazing to me that they have these guys that scored 35 a game in high school in the greatest basketball state for high school basketball I've ever smelled. All I know is, when you're a Mr. Basketball in Indiana, you're a badass. And then you go there and they got three of them and they suck. I'll never figure that out. So I'm not even going to talk about it anymore. I've never understood how you can't be good when you have all that talent there. And they still like, they really sucked. I thought, I mean, when you lose every game you play for the last month, you suck. And that's why Archie got fired. And that's why Mike's got the job. So who gets in your mind, your
quick,
initial job? Hold on a second, Aaron, Aaron, I'm out of time. Hold on 1 second. Fair enough. I respectfully, let's talk about Chapel Hill. Who do you think will be your initial jump into Chapel Hill after Roy Williams is gone? Do you have any ideas yet?
Well, listen, how much time do I have to go? Because I can be brief or I can tell my real opinion. Do I have a few minutes here?
Well, I have 2 minutes right now, and then we'll break and come back, and you can finish whatever you start.
Okay. Okay, what I would say is this, and I was telling Mafia this in the break. North Carolina is one of these jobs. You should call every guy that has turned down every other job, you should call. And the example that I've used and the example that I threw on my social media today, I remember asking John Calipari one time why he left Memphis. And you can laugh about it now. Memphis, of course, who wouldn't leave Memphis? They went to three Elite Eights, a Final Four, and a national championship game in his final four seasons at Memphis. And I said, Coach Cal, why'd you leave Memphis? He goes, because it's Kentucky. When Kentucky calls, you always pick up the phone. And I think that's North Carolina has to be their approach. They can't do this North Carolina BS, keep it in the family, it's all about the Tar Heel brotherhood. No. Go call Jay Wright and say, get him to say no. Call Mark Few. I know Mark Few's turned down every program in the Pac-12, but guess what? Oregon and Washington are not the same as the University of freaking North Carolina. And so to me, I believe that there is an elite coach out there somewhere. Yeah, so you know. Now, do I think they'll do that? I hope they will. I saw the press conference today. Roy Williams is going to be involved. You know, they're going to want to keep it in the family. Hubert Davis was the lead assistant for the last decade. He's a great, you know, coach. I'm not discrediting what he's done with that program. But to me, this is not Georgetown. This is not a bunch of other places where you got to promote from within. Go, listen, I'm telling you, call Mark Few. Make him say no. You're a state school in, you have every resource imaginable. There is a point that you can keep offering stuff that Gonzaga cannot match. Call Jay Wright. It's the same deal at Villanova. And so we could talk about it more after the break, Scotty, but it seems like you're in agreement. North Carolina is a cut from a different cloth. They should not be settling for some dude just because he has North Carolina ties.
Yeah, no doubt. You're right. And I think the same thing. Like, this is a heavyweight job. And I was saying to myself earlier, a guy like Scott Drew, what he's doing at Baylor, he could, he would answer the phone for North Carolina. We'll be back with Aaron Torres.
Don't think of us as a place to just hear sports talk. Think of us more as an all-you-can-listen buffet of live odds, live matchups, injury reports, and news you can use.
Bon appetit!
We are the Sports Grid Radio Network.
My friend on the bench, we're talking to Aaron Torres from Fox Sports out in L.A., and we were talking about Roy Williams retiring and who's going to get that gig, and that's a tough call. And obviously you're right about it's the like the heaviest deal in college basketball. Like, you know, you put them right there on the pedestal, on the Mount Rushmore of heavyweight jobs. That's one of them. And, you know, I remember when Doherty or whatever, who was the guy that the guy ended up at Notre Dame? What was it? Yeah, that didn't work out. So what do you think they're going to do? Like, do you have any idea, like, at all of who you think, like, beyond? Like, I think Jay Wright, what you said before, would be incredible. And I think a few, whatever, I think Drew would, you know, he'd jump at that job, I would think. I mean, I know some of these guys aren't moving for Indiana, but they would jump for North Carolina, I think most of them.
Yeah, no, and that's, you know, my personal opinion. And I thought it was weirdly a positive sign. The AD today at the press conference to announce Roy Williams' retirement said, you know, look, we've kept this in the family for a long time and we hope to do that, but that isn't the only decision. And to me, that was the fear because, you know, what I heard early is a lot of the stuff that everybody heard was that they definitively wanted to keep it in the family. And you look at people in coaching right now, there aren't those guys. I mean, you have Hubert Davis, who I referenced. He's been an assistant for about a decade now. Great young assistant. I mean, I don't know if he's young anymore. He's in his mid-late 40s. But, you know, really well-respected in that program. And if you just want to kind of keep this mojo going, keep the team intact, okay. And then outside of him, you know, UNC Greensboro's head coach is a former North Carolina player. They just made the tournament last year. But, you know, he's 38 years old. And, I mean, you know, as you just said, Matt Doherty, for people that don't remember, and I just talked to Matt Doherty about 6 weeks ago on my podcast. He has a new book out. You know, that job will chew you up and spit you out if you're not ready. And so to me, you know, I would go down that list of elite coaches, Scott Drew, like you said, Mark Few, Jay Wright, you know, Nate Oates at Alabama has a massive buyout, but you're North Carolina, figure it out. And so to me, I did think it was a positive sign from the AD to say, like, you know what, it's important to keep it in the family, but it's not going to be a be-all, end-all.
So, Aaron, let's talk about the Final Four. It's always great having you on the bench. Let's start with that first game, Houston and Baylor. And I got to tell you, it's real simple for me. I think Mitchell's a badass. He plays that like physical brand of guard where he's got the shoulders. He'll go right through you. He's powerful on the dribble. Defensively, he's just an absolute savage. And I think he makes a huge difference on both ends of the floor, all over the floor. He's a nightmare for guys with the ball. You have the ball, and that guy's on you. You're scared to death, and you're dribbling as far out on your draw as you can because that guy will eat you alive. And I don't even want to beat a point guard on the other team trying to bring it up against that monster.
Well, it's really funny. You know, I know the Arkansas staff well, and I got a lot of Arkansas fans that follow me, and that was their takeaway after that game was, you know, Arkansas had a bunch of, you know, nice college kids playing basketball, and Baylor had a bunch of grown men. And, you know, when I look at that game, Scotty, I see the exact same thing that you do, is the idea that, you know, I think because Baylor plays a lot of guards, you think that means that they're not a physical team. What you just said is 1,000% right. They're physical as you know what. They just don't have big guys on the floor. And so, you know, I think the biggest thing with Houston is if you can match their physicality, you know, they're beatable. They're a really physical team, and they're probably better offensively than they get credit for. But, you know, Rutgers is a really physical team, almost beat them in the second round. And Oregon State, it took, you know what, you know, probably about three quarters of the first half, but they figured it out. And by the end of the game, they were in that game. And so, you know, Baylor, great story, great team. Houston, great story, great team. I just like Baylor's dudes more. I think sometimes it just comes down to the players. And I don't think just because Baylor, quote unquote, doesn't put the biggest lineup out there, it doesn't mean they're not physical. It doesn't mean they're not tough. And because of it, I do like Baylor to win that game. And I think, you know, the spread's 5, 5.5. I like them to cover as well.
Wow. Listen, there you have it. I mean, that's beautiful. Let's talk about UCLA and Gonzaga. Now, I have to tell you, What I saw just in every game has just been this monumental pick and roll. Like, it's like a nightmare. If you're playing against them, you are going to get spun around till you got vertigo. I mean, they absolutely cut backdoor and pick and roll and move with the ball on a dribble to get it to the right guy to shoot a finger roll layup or a dunk 90% of the time. It is effing embarrassing. Watching what they do to, like, everybody was telling me USC was going to do it. Everybody was telling me Creighton was going to do it. Don't even get me started. I don't have all night. So, like, talking about all the teams that were going to do it and got their ass beat. Yep. What's going to happen to UCLA? Now, I think the Bruins are on fire. But I think they don't have, in my opinion, I think defensively, Gonzaga won't allow them to go off at all. I mean, defensively, they shut everybody down, but everybody talks about their offense like I just did, but their defense is actually better than their offense.
So, dude, you're taking all my points, man. You know, I think, first of all, UCLA, listen, I will say I picked against them against Bama. I picked against them against Michigan. So, I mean, I could look really stupid come, you know, late Saturday night. But, I mean, let's also be honest. You know, Alabama shot 11 for 25 from the foul line in that Sweet 16 game. Alabama easily could have won that game. Michigan scores 48 points in a Sweet 16 or an Elite Eight game. And, yes, a lot of that is a credit to UCLA's defense. But you're not going to hold Gonzaga to 68 points. And so,
good luck.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Scotty, I'll tell you the truth, man. Like, the point that you made about the layups and the offense, it's so true. And, like, you know, I think it's an important point to reference Gonzaga's defense. But, you know, USC was about as good of an interior defensive team as we had all year. We know the Mobley kid's going to be a lottery pick, and maybe he'll end up as a really good NBA player. But, you know, it's just – you just wait for somebody to – you're not going to beat us at the rim – and then everybody does. Like, you know, never forget, this was a team that in December played Virginia, which historically is a great defensive team, and put the worst loss on them of the Tony Bennett era against Virginia in December. And then, as you said, Creighton, top 40 defense in college basketball. That's a top 10% field goal percentage defense. You know, Creighton, it wasn't even close. USC, they have 2 7-footers, Evan and Isaiah Mobley. You think, okay, they'll protect the rim. Nope. Spacing, three-point shooting, it pulls the big guys away. All of a sudden, next thing you know, it's a layup line. And so I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. They still have two more games to win to, you know, finish this thing in incredible fashion. But it's like,
right.
I'm sorry, I love UCLA. What Cronin's done is incredible. But, like, I have a hard time seeing the scenario where, you know, a team that scored 51 points in the Elite Eight is now going to outscore Gonzaga in a Final Four game.
Yeah, and let me tell you, the other thing I noticed about this guy, Timmy, was he was going right in the Mobley twins' face. Like, he must have had
– yep.
I mean, he must have had 5 or 6 shots literally right in their face with mini hooks and up and unders and kisses off the glass or pound and pop. I mean, this guy went right in 2 7-footers' face and did his work and finished and slept yep. with their girlfriends. I mean, it was embarrassing that this guy, he took both of them to the woodshed. That was it. That was all there is to it. I've never seen anything like look. Real quick, I think they get the best for the ball movement price. The way they move the ball, they get the cleanest yeah. looks I've ever seen in my life. I mean, every shot they take, like the guy will go down on the baseline and pop a little 10-footer on the baseline. They'll shoot 15 layups in the game. They'll shoot their fair share of threes, and they'll make, like, you know, 4 or 6 or whatever it is. They don't even have to shoot the three to win. They can beat your ass shooting 2s and 10-footers.
Well, and, you know, first of all, let me say this about the Timmy kid is that I'll be honest, dude, I watched this stuff all year long, and I'll be honest, up until probably about a few weeks ago, oh, he's just a goofy white kid, you know, mustache, you know, cool story, you know, wait till he gets to, you know, the big boys. He's just a baller, dude. And, you know, he's 7 feet, 6'11", whatever he is. He's a passer. He's a cutter. He's a ball handler. You know, I'm not comparing him to Hakeem Olajuwon or anything, but, like, he is a very skilled player. And
sure
it took me till about 2 weeks ago that I said, like, this guy is the X factor. And, you know, Kispert and Suggs are going to be really high draft picks, but everything that makes him go, makes them go, is what Timmy does, not just in the post, but with the basketball and everything like that. And so you're right. First of all, I know the Mobley family. I love the Mobley family. I feel terrible about what happened to their girlfriends, according to Scotty Farrell. He's got some real buttons. But, you know, like, dude, like, you're right. I mean, you know, this kid has been unbelievable. The team, they're just so fun to watch. And, you know, I hope and I think we're beyond the, you know, Gonzaga plays in a small conference. They got at least three guys that are going to be first-round picks if they declare this year. Maybe four. Like, you know, their bench, they got McDonald's All-Americans coming off their bench. Like, we need to get over this. Gonzaga plays in a small conference crap. They've beaten Iowa, Kansas, West Virginia, USC, Oklahoma, Creighton. Like, they're just a really, really good basketball team, and I'm excited to see if they can finish this off and win the final two games.
Yeah, I think his footwork is incredible because he's got all that little dipsy doodle, spinorama, up and under, the fake going back, like the he's going to do a step back, a fadeaway little 10-foot popper, and then he just doesn't do it. He drags his foot back, goes underneath, and shovels. I mean, a guy, I mean, he makes people look foolish, and he's got that kind of perfect body for it, too. And his footwork, I think, is spectacular. His pivot foot footwork is freak. I love watching him play basketball, to be honest. I love watching them screen and roll and the way they move the ball and the way they play defense and steal the ball and the way they reach in and steal it and the way they block shots, the way they block out. Like, they're a real legit. And, in fact, I think Fuse should stay there. I mean, he's old. He's won 50 million games. Every kid in the country wants to play for him. He's got seven-footers coming out his ying. Everybody wants to play for him. He's got he's North Carolina and Spokane. Christ almighty, the guy's got out there. I would stay there if I was him. Hey, Aaron, you're a badass. I love you. Always enjoy having you on the bench. Enjoy the Final Four. I'll catch up with you again really soon. Kick-ass job.
All right, my man. Thank you for having me, Scotty. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games, okay?
There he is, Aaron Torres of Fox Sports and the Aaron Torres Podcast. Mafia is like a gazelle when he plays basketball. He's got footwork like Timmy and Mafia with his mini hooks and sky hook and baseline hook like Lou Alcindor. Mafia knows that Timmy's got the footwork just like you, right, Moff?
Listen, when you're not the high flyer, you're not the, you know, most athletic guy, you're just the hard worker, you got to have all the nuances like that. And that kid does it all. Like you said, he sets such great pick and rolls. He gets open for the easy layups. And then when it's not an easy layup, when they, you know, get in the way, he finds the way around that just to sneak in there and get those easy points and then just works his ass off, man. You got to love it.
Have you ever seen anything like he'll if he misses a bunny, he's the first guy to get it on the rebound and put it back in. Like, if he misses, he always gets the miss and puts it back in like 8 out of 10. I mean, he's an absolute freak for the Farrell, your boy Timmy. Can't wait to see the games 2 days away from the Final Four in Indianapolis. It's Farrell on a bench. Such a badass. He just absolutely is a monster in the block.
I just want to feel my burger finger.
You're so money and you don't even know it.
All right. The Nuggets are up 81-70 on the Clippers with 5 seconds left in the third. Nuggets get the last shot. Your boy Murray trying to get a kiss. He missed. So there you go. By the way, the Hawks win in double overtime in San Antonio. Your boy Gallinari with a dagger from the left corner with a fake pass to completely juke the Spurs defense, and then he just stood there and just jacked a three from the deepest part of the corner, and he was all fuego. Hawks win it by 5 in double overtime. Now, they almost blew that game. Wild and Knights in Vegas. It looks like ones with three left in the second, tied at ones, Wild and Vegas. And then baseball, White Sox lead the Angels 3-2, bottom six. They got runners on first and second, one out the Angels. Very exciting. And then the Astros lead the A's 3-0. The Astros were getting booed all night in Oakland by the fans at every chance. And then the Giants are up 5-0 on the Mariners in Seattle in the bottom of the sixth. And that pretty much does it. That Royals game today was so wild. 14-10, they beat the Rangers. Can you imagine the humanity of it all? That many runs on opening day at Kauffman to be rocking at that game. Can you imagine how cool that had to be? And how about the Rays? They win again. All they do is win. Guys leave and they still win. 1-0, they beat the Marlins in Miami. So there you go. There's not as many baseball games tomorrow. It's like a light slate. There's like 7 games. I'll see you at 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Coast to Coast. Good job, Mob. Good night, everybody.